Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is, Oh No, You Missed Your Appendix. That's supplied by Phil in the Slack group, and the runner-up was The Great Wall of Magnussen, provided by Chris in the Patreon Slack group as well. Hello, I'm your host, Richard Reddy, and today we witnessed a slight distraction from the Red Bull internal war as it took a two-hour break to allow us to actually watch some race cars, and it was Chapter 2 of the 2024 season. It proved to be entertaining, if not ground-shaking. Coming up, we'll discuss the great wheel-to-wheel battles, some fine strategies, and a solid debut from an Iceni warrior. We are an independent podcast produced in the Podcasting Shed with the kind support of our patrons and partners. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined in the shed by Matt Two Rumpets. Hello, Matt.
And that'll be 10 seconds for you, and 10 seconds for you, and 10 seconds for you, and especially 10 seconds for Magnussen.
But I started and then I quickly stopped again, so surely I'm okay. I did fluff exactly. I fluffed up the intro, so I hit the bumper on the live stream, then I stopped and did it again. Straight away in the live chat, Spanners pulled a Lando. That's why I often resist having a live chat.
Understandably. But as long as you don't trip the sensor, you're fine.
There you go. Also joined from Canada by Christina Lee Mace. Hello, Christina.
Hello. If you missed that little paw, Squeaks McGee is sitting right here. So we'll see how long he stays asleep, but he is here.
Well, Squeaks can have a starring role because we are unfortunately missing Stuffy, so, who couldn't get Riverside to work. But that does mean that we're only a third Essex. So not the pure Essex support that Oliver Behrman really deserved. But I'll tell you what, Matt, that apart from out front, it was a slightly entertaining race. I think it's slightly dampened by the fact that everyone was kind of hoping for something different, a little bit of a different order up at the top, and maybe something to distract us from all the off-track stuff. But there was some interesting strategy, but it was ruined fairly early.
Well, I mean, you say ruined, and I say Lance just saw his shot and took it. I'm not going to win the race, but I can dominate by doing this one thing.
Classic start from Lance Stroll there, Christina. And I think that's a good place to start because it's a very, very difficult 2023 for Lance Stroll that has led into a very, very difficult 2024.
Absolutely. And the thing with Lance Stroll is that he's a very standard midfield driver. And at the end of the day, we really should only expect that from him. So, you know, having very forgettable performances probably would be better for him than crashing, which is unfortunately what he did here. So
yeah, it's gone on sort of a long time, Matt, you know, and he is sort of famed for his lack of spatial awareness on occasion. So how many times have we talked about just turning in on someone where it didn't even look malicious? It just looked like he wasn't quite seeing where his front wheel was. Now you have to sort of question. I know people hit walls all the time, but it was a really avoidable accident.
Yeah, I mean, and all right, so I very much want to give him a hard time for this because it wasn't the kind of accident that was just an accident. It seemed inattentive. Like he nicked that wall where it's like, it was kind of like the Russell thing in Singapore last year where he like smashed into the wall where it stuck out a little bit. But you are right. The cars are big. It is hard to see, but it just, I mean, how he's 8 years into the sport. It's not the kind of mistake you would expect someone with his experience to be making very often.
And I feel like I stick the knife in quite a lot with Lance Stroll, but I know we've got Canada represented as well, so I need to watch my words carefully. But I do sort of feel like I'm semi-gaslit every time, that every time there's something that's worthy of criticism and we call it out, somebody says, oh, but you're just getting at him, or they make an excuse or a reason for it. After 8 years, it is mounting. Like, does Canada forgive us for pointing these things out when they happen?
Oh, absolutely. Quite frankly, there's nothing that Canadians love more than ragging on athletes that they absolutely adore. Take a listen to how any Canadians talk about their absolute favorite hockey team. They have absolutely no problem saying, oh, wow, they absolutely bottled it that game. They let us down. And at the end of the day, it's being a fan of somebody, it doesn't mean that you should blindly support them. And I say this as somebody that, you know, I support certain drivers' rights and their wrongs. But that still doesn't mean that I'm not willing to say this was a bad day for them. And it's just unfortunate when fans of any capacity, of any driver, aren't willing to say, no, you know what? This was a bad day. This was a bad move. And that's what happened today. Lance Stroll just lacked that little bit of awareness, which it's Jeddah. You know, it's one of those very, very unforgiving tracks.
Yeah.
So he, out of all people who does lack that spatial awareness, should probably have been going a little bit more conservative and should just be aware that that is his weak spot. It's the lack of awareness, not just for his car, but also that that's a personal failing that he doesn't account for. That's the real letdown in my mind.
And I begin to wonder, like I got from that today, this is like, I got the strongest Maldonado vibe from him I've ever gotten. And I don't mean this in the same way that Maldonado just really crashed, but it seemed to me that his concentration, because I mean, this is early in the race. It's not a time you'd expect someone to be zoning out. This is not lap 47 of 50 and I've passed no one and no one has passed me. This is still at the start where things can happen. And he was distracted or not paying attention. But I sometimes wonder, he says all this stuff out loud, but I do sometimes wonder, like, how much does he really feel that in his heart? Just a thought, you know?
Yeah,
just okay. Maybe still some leftover DTS.
Yeah, so the punishment doesn't fit the crime. So slightly hitting the wall, I guess. But you know, on a street circuit, as Jolyon Palmer reminds us, you have to be alert. So moving on from that. And the reason I wanted to linger on that a little bit is because like we are way past the point now where we have to apologize for criticizing Lance Stroll now. So 0.7 of a second off of Alonso, and it wasn't a freak. There wasn't really any extenuating circumstances. That was just representative of the pace and then stick it in the wall. So if that wasn't the team owner's son, you know, they'd be really under pressure. You know, that's another wrecked car. It's another missed opportunity, especially with Alonso in P4. But Matt, explain to us how the race was won and lost from that safety car point, because everyone was waiting for a safety car and it came early.
This is a race that continues with its 100% safety car ratio. Every year we've had this race, we've had a safety car. And in this case, because it's a one-stop race, pretty much everyone drives around until the safety car happens, gets their pit stop in, and then makes the hard tires go to the end. Because looking at the Pirelli preview, they were capable. The hard tire alone should have been able to do the whole race without a stop. So there was never going to be a lot of drama in this race. There was even less with the DRS. But with an early stop like that, yeah, it really limited the amount of strategic action we had. Didn't kill it entirely. But yeah. Did limit it.
And Christina, I don't want to give up my machismo by saying that track scares me. So can you do it, please?
That track scares me. It gives me the heebie-jeebies, quite frankly, like up and down the spine. I feel quite tense watching a lot of it, especially we also had, shameless plug here, F1 Academy this weekend.
Yes.
And watching their tiny cars and how much space they have on that track, it was so much more relaxing. And I was just sitting there thinking, this isn't as bad. They're not going as fast. They're not as big. This is great.
Yeah.
And then you jump into the Formula One sessions where they can't go too wide in the majority of the track. The corners are still blind for a huge chunk of the track, despite the fact that they did a whole bunch of improvements last year. And it is better than it was, but it still makes me very, very tense. Yes.
And you're not the only one. Remember Ollie Bearman's dad during qualifying? Mm-hmm. His face when they almost hit the wall? And just like, I was like, as a parent, I was like, oh man, do I ever feel that?
Yeah, I know. And I have to admit, like early on when I first birthed and spawned children, I thought they're going to grow up, I'm going to push them into racing. And then it didn't take long for me to be genuinely seriously put off it. It was one where V spun across the track and then the lad just came in and absolutely T-boned her. And just hearing the crunch of your two little ones. And then later on in the day, they were sharing a corner and I saw my little daughter open the steering up very deliberately to run him into the wall so that she could stay ahead. And honestly, I think as a parent, it takes a lot of, like, I don't know how you park that, but what was really sweet was Ollie Bearman's dad seemed to be just living every single moment, every single turn with him.
Yeah, it was one of the best parts of the weekend, really just getting to see his reaction in the garage like that and thinking, man, can you imagine your eight, I can't even imagine handing my 18-year-old the keys to my car just to drive around on the roads, never mind a car that drives like that, and then having to watch the result. Nightmare fuel.
Okay, so
please tell me you guys are the parents that hold on to the car as your kids are driving and just hope and pray that you're okay. Because that's what Mama Mace does. Even to this day, when it's like, I've been driving for well over a decade. I've got this. It's fine. It is still the death grip, as if that's going to save her if I slip and slide.
Yeah, not quite there yet. But okay, so that's the huge story. Obviously, Carlos Sainz, his appendix, he seems fine. He looked really ill on Friday. And then he's back in the garage. He looks like he's okay, but obviously not fit to race. So you dump in 18-year-old Ollie Bearman, who has not, obviously, that's his Grand Prix debut. It's a funny one when it comes to a reserve driver that you take the kid from the pool who's currently doing F2. So you would, in the past, when we've seen the reserves jump in, it's been the likes of Nico Hülkenberg and Paul de Resta. And you sort of think, well, do you know what? They're old and ugly. Yeah, for sure. Just chuck them in on that Saudi Arabian track.
We won't miss them if they're gone.
Well, it just feels like, you know, well, they're a veteran. But then, you know, you chuck a kid in and it's frightening because as a 43-year-old, he really looks like a kid. Like, it's scary how much he looks like a kid. Like, he looks like a school child to me. That's more of a reflection of how old I am, I suppose. But you go, wow, that is maddening. So we're just going to chuck this kid straight in with 1 hour's practice. So I'm not saying any reflection on whether he did well or not, but I wasn't sure whether that was the right thing to do, especially at this track. So I'm kind of glad it went off without a hitch. But performance-wise, Matt, I think it's quite interesting that we see the difference between when they give these kids the FP1 practice sessions or the rookie driver tests. Like, it's really clear that in those FP1s, they don't turn up the wick. They don't give them all the toys. And then suddenly, here, FP3, go.
Oh, yeah. Well, and of course they don't. I mean, who wants to break a car that expensive with a rookie in it? The amazing thing to me, really, is that because of the rules of the game, the car he got was essentially the one that Sainz set up. Because at the end of FP3, the car is going to park for May. So they would have had data during that session, and they would have been able to adjust very little on the car to his taste. He basically got handed somebody else's cars, was told to learn the track in an hour. I think F2 races there, so he probably knew the track fairly well. And then they're like, oh, here, go drive the car as absolutely fast as anyone can drive it in qualifying after an hour's practice. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I feel like in the olden days, it would have been easier for a rookie to come in and be on pace, and perhaps the overall standard isn't as high, whereas now nobody really expects a substitute to jump in and do really well. So everyone was saying, oh, Leclerc's being really helpful, he's being really nice about it, and Leclerc does seem nice, but you can imagine there are some teams where you drop in and they go like, hey, what do you think you should do around turn four? Oh, flat. Yeah. Turn four, flat. Yeah, good luck, kid. You know, off you go.
That's the old Razor Blades in the Piano Keys Juilliard audition.
Oh, my God. Man. Yeah. That's made me. Yeah. That's made
that
me.
That kind of thing.
So anyway, Ollie Bearman, I mean, obviously it's been spoken about a lot, but we can't underestimate the achievement of just getting in there and surviving. So ordinarily you'd say, well, P4, because you've got the second best car. But today, wasn't it interesting on the radio and listening to, you know, the management saying to him, survive, kid, and really like talking him down, chill. It was all right, just chill out. Like, is that the right approach?
Well, I was going to say, don't forget, Vasseur has a long record with juniors too here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he worked with Hamilton when he was a kid. He worked with a bunch of current drivers on the grid as they were coming up through the junior ranks. So in some aspects, maybe Bearman really did luck out because Fred understands how to deal with people that age and how to put them at ease and give them the tools they need to be successful in an incredibly stressful environment, quite frankly.
Yeah. So how do we rate him, Christina, overall for the weekend?
Oh, just a fabulous job. Especially, he hasn't driven this version of the car yet. He hasn't had an FP1 session yet. So just on that, solid job. The finding out, by the way, you're not going to be doing F2, you're going to be doing F1 the morning of, and then going for it. So just lovely to see him stay calm, to take it, to take everything that was just kind of thrown at him and to go with it. Just very solid job there. Yeah. And he always stayed so calm on the radio as well. You could tell that he was just taking this as another day in the office, just kind of going through his paces. Their headspaces, like, are just so incredible to listen to. He sounded quite excited at times that he was in the car. He was being self-critical. And I think that's also a good reason for Fred Vasseur and the team overall to tell him not to push too hard, because there's no telling these drivers not to push hard. Mm. They're going to do that naturally anyway. So if you at least pull back and say, no, we as a team, just whatever you do, that's a fantastic perspective to take, in my opinion.
All right. But looking at the actual performance, okay, so you're in there. You're in the big kids league now. So we get to actually talk about what you did. Like straight away, I think it was on lap one, he's trying to hang it around the outside of a Williams. He then stuck his nose on Tsunoda, of all people, as well. And I wonder, in our leagues, Matt, when we do our iRacing and stuff, you kind of go, oh, that's Henny. He will kill me without a second thought. Oh, that's James Gill. I'd better brake a lot later because he's going to try and come through my gearbox. I wonder if like it crossed Bearman's mind to go, that's Tsunoda. Maybe I shouldn't just jam my nose in up the inside. But he gave it a good go and actually was able to withdraw in time to avoid it. But there was no gun shyness at all.
No, that was maximum adrenaline, I assure you. Because later on, you could see him start to make better choices about his overtakes. Like he would be lining it up and you could see him going, well, I could probably try and insist on that. But if I wait another lap, I'll have it for sure. But those opening laps, but also understand he knew he had those soft tires and he had a limited, very limited lifespan to try and make places up. And he probably felt bad about not making Q3. It was just unfortunate the way Ferrari ran him, and that his first lap really got spoiled by the safety car in qualifying. So he was down a set of tires. But yeah, he did not leave very much on the table those first few laps, and it was very exciting to watch.
From a Hamilton fan point of view, and look, I take these, there's two things. One is the all-encompassing, friendly host, and I talk about my biases, but we try and be inclusive nearly. But then when it comes to like the Twitter arguments, there was so much fan leverage about Lawson coming in and then immediately knocking out Verstappen. Now, how did that work? Someone knocked out Verstappen basically out of the Singapore Grand Prix, and he ended up not making Q3 due to his teammate. And you go, if a rookie had come in and knocked Lewis Hamilton out, I'd have had to have gone back deleting tweets. But he came very close to knocking out Lewis Hamilton and really compounding Lewis Hamilton's bad qualifying performance. So I think that was the most impressive thing. He had one run basically one chance to practice on low fuel. So, yeah, so it's hard to argue now that he doesn't justify a future seat that's going to come up in one of the Ferrari-based teams.
They were talking about a Haas seat a whole lot in the post-race show on F1 TV, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if today's performance might have changed his future in Formula One for the better.
Do you reckon that's why Magnussen was absolutely on it?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Could definitely be a motivator. But they also do have six sessions with Ollie Bearman scheduled in the Haas for FP1 already.
Six?
So that is already a huge part of it. Yes, and they're scheduled, okay, like which race weekends they're happening at. Not just, oh, we're going to do six. He's on the calendar.
Yep.
They're getting them prepped.
So you go and do a good job at Haas, and then suddenly 2025, Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc start to look nervous and start to look at their performances. Okay, so definitely they're one for the future. But actually, in this race, I think there were two fairly interesting battles going on, which was Hamilton versus the McLarens. But really, I kind of want to start with what was going on down at the bottom end. Okay, the Great Wall of Magnussen comment.
Oh, so good.
I was telling Christina before the show started that if the only thing that happened was that strategy from Haas, it would have been an amazing race to watch. They nailed the strategy. Magnussen had to drive brilliantly. I mean, admittedly, he was a bit messy earlier in the race, and I guess we'll get to that later. But his pace differential, once he cleared, and for the listeners, here's what he did. Once he realized he had the penalties, the team said, look, you've got these penalties, but if you drive slowly enough, Hülkenberg, who didn't get to stop under the safety car, will have the ability to pit and finish in 10th place and get us a point. But you have to drive perfectly, and you have to drive so slow that you create a 20-second gap. And he did exactly that. No one could get around him at all. And Hülkenberg pitted, and he got the point for Haas. And then he sped up so much. This is the bit that I love that nobody noticed. He sped up so much that Verstappen couldn't catch him. So even though he had 20 seconds penalties, he also was the last finisher on the same lap as Verstappen. He was unlapped. So the penalty didn't affect his actual finishing place at all. He finished 12th, and that's the position he got. Or maybe 11th, and then Albon, he flopped with Albon. But yeah.
Okay, this is the American point of view, and the Americans don't mind cheating at all, do they? They're like, yeah, let's get in there, let's get any advantage we can. But from the British and Canadian point of view, Christina, like, at what point does that become not cricket?
Oh, there are no rules in sports. All's fair in love and war. Like, if you want to win, you do what you gotta do. Like, you're not gonna get anything from me in that aspect.
You're from the land of hockey fist fights as well, so yeah.
Oh yeah, like, but you know what, any advantage you could get, it's fine. That's part of the sport. If it's not explicitly said you cannot do it in the regulations, go for it and do it. I love regulations. I think they're fabulous, but you read them and you interpret them as they're written. If somebody wrote a poor set of regulations that allow for things like this to occur, for strategies to exploit the gaps in the regulations, then you do that.
Don't get me wrong. I love the team interplay, Matt, but he was legitimately just lifting in that high speed section that makes me go, if anything goes wrong there, no one's got time to react. And you're just going through those slow speed things, just not accelerating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if people thought they could go faster, they were free to pass them, weren't they?
Oh, do you know what? EJ has, EJ, a Danish patron in our Patreon live chat, has come to the defense of Kevin Magnussen here. And I'm not really attacking Kevin Magnussen because, but he does need some defending today. So you could argue that he has gone to the dark side today. So yeah, in Monaco, nobody bats an eyelid about people slowing up. But there's a difference, I think, between pace and go, this is my tire saving pace, and then just not accelerating. So this is an argument I've had with the racers, like Brad and Alex and Kyle in the Missed Apex chat. But because they've got, you know, all this experience in karting and sim racing, they think absolutely nothing of just not accelerating out of a corner. So, you know, so I'll be behind them and, you know, and then I'll hit them. I go, but you didn't accelerate. And they go, well, I didn't have to. I don't have to clear the space in front of you. I'm not obliged to do that. So, I mean, Magnussen was doing a very extreme version of that. And so suddenly, you know, you look at the TV, Matt, and you go, oh, why is there seven cars bunched up together at the back of the grid? Imagine if something like that was happening, you know, up at the sharp end. That would have been incredible, but it was anyway.
Well, didn't we see Perez employ a tactic like that at one point up at the sharp end?
Oh, Abu Dhabi, the race, yeah, which we dare not speak its name.
Sorry, it just came to mind as an example. Yeah. I forgot it was attached to your favorite race ever.
Yeah, no, yeah. So I just wonder where that limit is. So can you stop? Like, at what point is it deemed? Because, okay, put it this way. When a tactic starts to become more recognized, because now, if you've got two drivers together and they're willing to work together, you know, which teams would do that? Maybe Ocon and Gasly would do that. Maybe Tsunoda and Ricciardo. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, there are certain teams in the midfield where if they're running together, now you kind of go, all right, let's just literally create a gap. I don't think I've seen it that extreme before, Matt, where they've done that to benefit one driver. And in fact, the only near example I can think of is slowing down and creating a gap in the pit lane during a safety car to ensure that your double stap works out. And that is penalized now, doing that. So why isn't this?
I think because, again, there's no regulation that you have to drive the car as fast as the car is capable of being driven. I think to answer your question, though, I'm remembering, I think it was Las Vegas, where Alonso lifted alarmingly early for a turn. It was coming up to the DRS detection point, and Hamilton was behind him, and Hamilton got on the radio and complained about it. And I don't remember if Alonso was penalized for it, but I think the difference is accelerating out of a corner is a very different thing to suddenly breaking 150 meters earlier than you normally do. So in the braking zone, I think you'd have an absolute point beyond your usual lift and coast. People aren't going to be super excited about you being weird in braking zones, but on acceleration, on throttle, that's too individual. You have to look at what's ahead of you and make your judgments accordingly. And look, it worked out for Haas. They saw the possibility of that strategy. The team did, which I think kudos to them. They had a car that had genuine pace enough to pull it off. And they had two drivers, both good enough to make it work on the track. And that's a big change for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they are good. The two drivers, they are good enough. And they're good enough not in they're Max Verstappen or they're the Lewis Hamilton. They're like the Mighty Ducks. They've each got their special thing. Like Magnussen's got the big slap hit. Do you know what I mean? So hang on, is that a 90s reference? My references are getting old. But that's, you know, Magnussen's just elbows out attitude towards driving. I think a lot of people are getting upset, and like I think people in our chat were saying, oh, he's being a menace. I think he's being a racing driver, but I think Haas are on the verge of moving the needle on what teams do in Formula One, because you look at Magnussen's performance today and you go, well, he got punished a bit, but not enough to stop what he was doing. So it wasn't a deterrent. Now he would go and do that again.
100%.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't get a penalty for all the driving he did after he got the penalties. Now, did he? He got the penalty for, well, you know.
Show me where he did dangerous driving. Oh, yeah, when he hit Albon. So that is our first. Whose fault is it? Okay, so we get to play judge and jury. Have we got an opinion? Christina Lee Mace, whose fault was it when Magnussen drifted over and smashed Albon into the wall?
Oh, I would go with Magnussen in that point. He was quite far over what a center line would be. And it's Jeddah. So at another track, I might have a different opinion of like, yeah, whatever, there's a runoff zone. But he had a couple of instances with Albon, with Tsunoda, where, yeah, there was nowhere for the other drivers to go. And it was a game of millimeters kind of a thing, where if he had stayed just slightly over, it would have been in the clear. He just misjudged that little bit where, yes, it's definitely on him.
It's not actually too dissimilar to Lewis Hamilton in Monza when he cut across, I think it was the second chicane, and he ended up taking the racing line and he hit a McLaren. It was Leclerc. I think he hit Leclerc. But in any case, he ended up getting a black and white flag for that. And I think this is quite an interesting one with the rules, because he's sort of nearly ahead. So I know you're going to defend Albon whatever, but like, is there not a case to go, well, he was far enough ahead. Surely he had it.
I think in a place like Jeddah, for me, my judgments at least are they're going to be different, because even if you are farther ahead and you're allowed to, you know, take the space, just being conscious that there's nowhere for the other person to do, even if it's not for position, just as a courtesy of, hey, I will leave you enough space so you don't go smashing into the wall.
Sorry, courtesy?
That's...
You just told me there are no rules in sport. Everything's on the cards, and you want Kevin Magnussen of all people to show courtesy.
I mean, to not have somebody crash, yes, that's where I draw the line. If you want to, if there's room to drive them off the track, I'm all for that. But if there isn't, maybe don't do that.
I think there's a big difference, Matt. We have a schism in our community between adhering to the lane system and kind of, and then the, you're entitled to this entry, you're entitled to this corner, you've, this is your corner. Whereas a lot of us are like, yeah, but you, there was a vehicle there. So it's a tough one. I don't think it's as simple as it quite looked.
No, actually, it's not. And I will now mostly defend Magnussen. I think from a technical reading of the rules, it would be difficult for it not to have been his fault. He was ahead. It was an avoidable collision. However, what has not been talked about yet is the particular design of the track entering that corner where that kind of juts out at you and you have to swing out to get round it. And I bring this up because of all people, Alex Albon, who, if anyone should have been, you know, miffed at this contact, it was him. And he's like, honestly, he said, it's pretty much a racing incident because the track really forces you that way. And it was clear he wasn't intentionally trying to drive me into anything. He just drifted a little further, trying to open up that corner a bit more, and didn't realize where I was because he probably couldn't see me in his mirrors, because they can apparently never see anything in their mirrors at all. And so, I mean, I'm tempted to just say, you know, I really kind of blame the track and the track design for this one, because it puts the drivers, when they're that close together, into an almost inevitable conflict if, you know, if they're trying to race each other.
It's a little bit like Imola as well, where you go into that turn one and the track just drifts out to the right. And that's where you got the Russell Bottas incident, didn't you? And so you can kind of argue about where the track was going. But here, it does feel fairly certain that there was a wall on the other side of Albon, so Albon couldn't do anything. But I didn't see what was behind Albon. So from a driver-coach point of view, you know, we're always talking about risk-reward. You've got Magnussen coming across the track. He's pretty far ahead of you. Do you have to keep your nose in? Because I think the current rules of F1, though, favour Albon. So we've always seen that penalised. But I think in the olden days racers would have gone, well, I'm far enough ahead, I'm going to take my racing line. And if you want to crash, go, good luck. You know, that would have been the Senna way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, again, you know, we talk about iRacing, but I certainly try to avoid overlapping people that way in tight spaces if I can possibly avoid it. Now, obviously, Albon was trying to get round him, so, you know, there's that to be considered. But yeah, I think it was just Magnussen not being able to understand where Albon was in relationship to him. And also, he had a driver directly in front of him that I think he was also trying to negotiate with heading into that turn. So that could have been part of it, too. He had, because at that point, they were all stuck together. They had people all sides of them. So, yeah, it was messy.
Yeah. So who else was involved with that? And apologies, we're starting at the back end of the grid. I just feel like this is the most interesting thing that happened. But so in there, you had Albon and you had Tsunoda in there. And I think Zhou Guan Yu was in there as well. But this is it. Between the Visa Cash App drivers, Yuki Tsunoda was in the mix, fighting everybody in there, bumping wheels, cutting off Behrman. And it just seemed like Ricciardo could barely hang on, Christina. So, you know, that's, if you're a Danny Ric fan, you're looking at the two qualifyings and that race and going, what's happening?
Not a good weekend, that's for sure. And quite frankly, I couldn't even really tell you what was going on with him because I did not pay attention to him that much. I felt like you could tell right from the get-go of qualifying that he just was not vibing with the car. He was not having a good weekend. And I kind of just ignored him after that. And then you see him just spin out on his own.
Was it on his own? Was it just on his own?
Yeah.
There was no other car around. You can see it from Verstappen's onboard when he's coming up to lap. They're going around turn one and two, I believe it was. And Ricardo's rear end just swings out. And then he's facing backwards. It seemingly, maybe he hit a curb kind of funny, but there's not a crazy, crazy drastic curb at that point. It's a relatively soft one. And he'd been struggling the whole race. It's just a bad time to start to have a slump because the RB seats, the Red Bull seats, everything is quite chaotic. So if you're Danny Ric, you got to pull yourself together a little bit and put out good performances. And that's just not what we got this weekend.
As I said earlier, it was nice to see him regain the form he had with McLaren today.
Yeah, well, actually, that was going to be my point, which is how much danger is he in reputationally and career-wise? Like, I'm sure he's made his money out of Formula One, and he is going to be a pundit on Sky Sports. So if anybody thinks that Daniel Ricciardo isn't going to be or doesn't want him to be a pundit on Sky Sports, prepare to be disappointed, because we have seen this before. We saw it with David Coulthard. Go, oh yeah, no, he's got pundit written all over him. And then Mark Webber, it's more in the Mark Webber mold. And Jenson Button, that was the most blatant one where I called that from about eight seasons out and went, he is desperate to be on Sky Sports. So Ricciardo's going to be okay. But reputationally, like a, you know, the heavyweight boxer comparison I always use, Matt, this is not good for Ricciardo. He's already got the damaging McLaren thing under his belt. Nobody was really convinced that he was on top of Tsunoda last season. And now it looks like Tsunoda's stretching his legs.
Yeah, well, to me, the big difference here is qualifying. I mean, the race is the race. His performance in the second half of the race can't be attributed fully to him because he had a 41-second pit stop under the safety car, which kind of...
When was that? Today?
Today.
Oh, I missed that. Missed that totally.
Yeah, no, okay. Almost everybody did. I mean, and someone asked, why is Ricciardo in the end of the line? And I went and looked, and I'm like, oh, well, you know, 41 seconds stop.
Okay, but even at the end of the line, though, everybody else in that line was making moves on each other. And it looked like Rick was barely able to hang on. So there must have been some other issue at the end. And the telltale is that losing it for no reason on his own. You kind of go, that sort of points to, you know, to something being up.
Yeah, maybe his appendix is like getting ready to burst.
Maybe his appendix is getting ready to burst.
I think it's just like it's a mental thing. Like, you go in for that race, you're struggling, and you go in, and then with a pit stop like that, you know your race is done. Like, I'm finished. I might as well park this car because it's not that fast, and I'm not catching all those people, and I'm certainly not passing them at this track with this car. And, you know, like, yeah, your mind wanders. The tires wear out. Because, like how can you... When you know, this is cyclist used to do this.
No, oh, he's got when cycling in. Everyone drink cycling.
Sorry, but you would, like, if you got dropped from the main pack and you were miles behind, at a certain point, you ask yourself, what is the point in finishing this race? And I just wonder if maybe once that pit stop happened, if maybe that's
right.
Like, his brain just kind of went there. Yeah.
No, and I've seen that in races. And by the way, I make no apology for comparing my experiences on iRacing or karting to Formula One. Like, just, it's a feature, it's happening. So when you have all that build up, we used to do two weekly races. We used to do the Swarm, two weekly races on a Wednesday, and I build up to it and I'm practicing and practicing for that lap. If you get contact on lap one and then you're staring down the barrel of 25 laps of just, you know, you're not going to catch anyone. It is very demoralizing. But then again, it's not my job that I get paid millions to do. The last one in that pack, and that was kind of disappointing, is Stake F1. Now, me and Christina were very fan curious with Stake. I feel like after the livery launches, we were both nudging over to, well, okay, I wanna give these guys a fair shake of the stick. But ooh, what a horrible weekend.
It's never good when you have the same mistake happen twice. And even if it's not the exact same mistake, it is close enough that it definitely has you raising your eyebrows to what's going on there. And I mean, part of their misfortunes were just Joe having the horribly timed crash right at the end of FP3.
Worst case scenario.
They rushed as hard as they possibly could. And they just missed that checkered flag by seconds. And then he had the horrible pit stop. So it was a weekend just filled with misfortunes that... Bad timing after bad timing. And it really does make it hard to feel optimistic when you see just that kind of a slump. It's not encouraging at all.
No, but so for Joe Guan Yu to just drop it like that and stick it in the wall, that's not something that he's generally done. So I do class him as a pay driver. I think he's a buy-in driver. I know people argue with me, but growing up, the lad had his own go-kart track. So they just had a go-kart track that was for him. Yeah. So, and I think they are incredibly wealthy. So I think he's as close to a pay driver as you can get without being one. But he generally keeps himself out of trouble and isn't annoying and seems to be broadly on Bottas's pace. So a little bit out of character for that fairly innocuous crash that then cost him the qualifying. But it sort of, hang on, I wish there was a race driver here, because as he was sliding backwards into the barrier, my instinct was, can't he just accelerate forwards to try and slow down? Do you reckon that would work? There's no race drivers here. Just drop a gear, first gear, rev it up in the movies.
I mean, I would do that in snow and ice, but like,
exactly.
That's usually when I'm in an empty parking lot just for the fun of it.
Hooligan. No,
so it's Canada. There's nothing else to do.
No, that's
except
true.
Throw stuff at geese. Yeah, like, fight me, bro.
Canadian grease, I mean. Geese, I mean. So not only that, but then obviously they're scrambling then to get it ready for qualifying. And then, so in Q1, they're working on it the entire time in Q1. They're attaching duct tape to things, but they do get him out. But then he dawdles around on the outlap, and no one seemed to say to him, mate, hurry up. And then he just never got his lap in. So that's like a penalty shootout for the engineers, desperately getting him out on track. And then he didn't even get a lap in. And you just go, oh, all that work, I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to bring up the possibility here, because everybody else was out and slowing down for their last laps. He got out, there was under 2 minutes left. He was well off of a standard outlap amount of time.
Well, how long is a standard outlap then?
Two and a half minutes.
Oh,
maybe.
Oh, that's worth that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So then you don't want to overheat your tires or take too much out of them.
Well, no, you might as well, because you might gain a position or two if you have a good lap. You might as well try and make the checkers, but he's also going to run into everybody backing up to give themselves space for their last runs to make Q2. And I suspect that traffic at the end of it all was why he couldn't really get round and have a proper go at it.
So Paddy's saying, I think his rear axle locked up. And so you remember at the beginning of the hybrid era, you'd get loads of just weird braking things where the engine braking at the back would do something to the rear wheels. I'm not sure it was that. I think racing drivers have it drummed into them that you hold the brakes in that situation. So I think that's the reason why it looked like the wheels weren't turning. So he's in a spin and his instinct is hold the brakes. Less can go wrong if I just hold the brakes. But then there was a pit stop later on in the race where Joe was... had a long stop, and I don't know if you noticed, there was like O-rings bouncing along. Like they were, I don't know what they were doing, but they had like spare parts bouncing along. And I don't know if the wheel nuts have got a washer on them, but I saw something the size of an F1 wheel nut that looked very much like a washer, and they seemed to put the wheel on without it. Now I know as engineers and mechanics, you tend to say washers are for wimps, but again, it just spoke of maybe something operationally not quite clicking. But anyway, I think we can move slightly up the grid. Okay, so let's two teams that have done well, and then I think into the Hamilton versus the McLarens. It's really hard to talk about Red Bull at the moment. Like, it's so difficult to go, what interesting content is there around Red Bull that doesn't involve subterfuge, that isn't game of Red Bull? So this, Matt, is not my opportunity to go, right, here's my dossier of what I think is going on in the civil war at Red Bull. I'm more than happy midweek to come and have a chat about it, because I'm expecting some more information to come out tomorrow. But the on-track stuff, it's really difficult to talk about. All you can say, Max Verstappen, lap one, bullied his way into the leads and then disappeared. Well done.
And then led. But, you know, you were wrong.
But I'm first.
You are first, but you were wrong. Oh. Because we have a lovely battle at the start with Ferrari and Leclerc and Perez.
True.
And an observation from me, which is this is the second race in a row where both Red Bulls have gotten amazing launches, much to the detriment of Leclerc, who has been on the front row and generally not been able to keep up with him. So I think that's an issue maybe for Ferrari to try and figure out why Red Bull are so good at the starts
now. Oh, good. Another thing that Red Bull are absolutely brilliant at. They, honestly, though, they don't have any weaknesses. So I've seen dominant cars before. And then when you've had dominant cars like the 2014 Mercedes, there was loads of stuff that went wrong. They had reliability issues. They had some tactical, you know, they had that do-nothing policy that then messed them up when they had to fight against Vettel. Yeah, in the Ferrari. But where's the weakness? There's no weaknesses at Red Bull.
Go on, ask me which gearbox Perez is on right now.
Which gearbox is Perez on right now?
Number two.
And that's high, I assume, too. Okay.
Yeah. You generally don't want to have a new gearbox every race.
How many, Christina?
That's going to run you out. You're limited to three or four,
I think,
for the season.
Yep. Squeaks meowed twice. So I think he thinks it's two.
Always wait, do we have a new pope now?
Yeah.
They took it down, then they took it up. But yeah, he's already gone through one. But hey, Max Verstappen didn't get fastest lap this week. So you know what? He should probably think about retiring, slumping away into a corner to sit in shame. He lost a whole point that was up for grabs. Like, what's going on with him? How can that's going to keep him up at night?
So
that's going to distract him from all his sim racing.
What
he was doing before he went to the race.
Oh, yeah, apparently, yeah. 4 a.m. he was still doing iRacing and streaming that. And then still manages to just tip up and, you know, dominate the F1 championship. So why was Perez closer?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Perez seemed a lot happier with the car. Was Max just on cruise control? Because if I think, you know, Red Bull are causing enough damage to F1 at the moment without Verstappen being 50 seconds up the road. You could just, someone could have a word in his ear and go, hey, you know, once you're 10 seconds up the road, that'll do. Perez is not going to come charging after you anyway. Or do you think that gap did genuinely close? Someone guess.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you know how people will do, look at FP2 times and do long run analysis and just sort of give you a general pace marker of where they think all the teams are. And everybody does it. Everybody comes up with different numbers. But in general, what I saw was 2 to 3 tenths. Everybody's 2 to 3 tenths back of Red Bull. I think it was a bit more in the race because I think race conditions like traveling and traffic can sort of magnify those. But I'm not sure how much farther up the road they could have been if Red Bull just said, yeah, just bury it. Use all the gas up. Don't worry about the tires. Just go, 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 go. I think it is genuinely closer. But I think the thing that's made it different this season is that Perez is close in the race now, much closer to Verstappen than he was last season. Like once they got like their first big updates, Verstappen was just gone from everybody. And it was 13 seconds to Perez. It was 18 seconds to Leclerc. So he had two cars inside a pit stop. He did, I think, take his time with the hard tires. When Norris was at the head of the restart, I'm like, wow, it's taken him a while to get around Norris. But then it occurred to me, well, you know, these tires have to last a long time. And, you know, eventually Norris is pitting anyway. And so just take your time, bring them in gently. And then when they're fully up to temperature, you can just, you know, go by him like he's, you
he's
know,
stood
driving
still.
Grandma's jalopy or something.
If I have to confess, there was just a slight glimmer of hope. So obviously there was only two cars that didn't pit. And my immediate instinct was, in that front battle. So you had Norris and Hamilton who didn't pit. Also, Joe didn't pit. Who else then?
Joe and Hulkenberg were the other two.
Okay. So instinctively, you go, that doesn't look like the right call. They've been forced into doing that. They're now on a worn, you know, tire, six laps on heavy fuel on a less durable tire. The hards are going to come in and swamp them. But there was that moment of hope, and you go, well, what if this is the best tactic? And actually, they're not having to worry about preserving their tires. And then Verstappen cruelly didn't immediately overtake Lando Norris, which just gave us a few laps going, hang on a minute, hang on. But so why was that such a bad way to have been forced to go in the end, Matt?
I was just looking to make sure that they were the only four who didn't pit. It was bad because of the pit stop loss time, ultimately. So Norris definitely was just, let's try something different. I think Norris was taking the low probability, high reward strategy. At the time, they said, oh, well, you know, he was behind Piastri. Maybe McLaren was worried about double stacking or just a busy pit lane. And they're like, hey, look, you know, these medium tires will go 40-ish laps. If we keep you out there, you're going to be in front or near the front. And if we get another safety car, then you're going to win the big lottery ticket strategy-wise, because you're going to gain more places by that than you'll be able to by overtaking people, because the delta to overtake people here is so high with a strong DRS. And so I think for Norris, it was definitely just a roll of the dice. He was behind his teammate, and it would get him ahead of his teammate, and it could really pay off big points-wise for the team. So, why not do it? Why not see what happens?
Yeah. And honestly, but Hamilton sounded less happy. He sounded about as happy as Squeaks McGee, because he never wants to be left out on the old tyres. He's always unhappy with it. Yet, you know, Mercedes, they're not aggressive. So if you were going to say, right, one team's going to leave a driver out, you would have put Mercedes on that list straight away, and he immediately wasn't happy.
Well, yeah. I mean, what driver wants to be on slower, older tyres?
I think it's just kind of the role of Mercedes this year to kind of be a disappointment. Oh. They lack confidence in themselves, and they have for a number of years. I'm not going to think that they're going to do a great job if they themselves are just saying, oh, well, it's the best that it's going to be. It is what it is. Like, we're still trying to fix. They went ahead and they have a new concept of car this year. Oh, my God.
Your cat has tripped something on your computer that is
he did.
So it's the accessibility thing. So if you just type what you say, your computer's going to tell us what it is. It looks like you've solved it now. I think, look, we can talk about Mercedes being a genuine disappointment, Christina. Obviously, there's that slack of, well, it's a brand new thing. And I think they were way more confident than it's now turned out over these two races. And I think they look lost, they look disappointed, and it's horrible.
It is. And the part that's frustrating for me is that they spent so much time trying to fix something that just clearly wasn't working in the last 2 years. So they've just dug themselves into a hole at this point that they're really struggling to get out of. And I mean, a bad day for Mercedes isn't necessarily a bad day overall. They're still up there as far as teams go, which is baffling to me. But it's even more disappointing when you watch somebody like Lewis Hamilton, who you know can put together fabulous laps, can drag bad cars to the absolute limit of what is possible. And how bad does a car have to be for Lewis Hamilton not to be able to make it somewhat performative? Like, it's... incredibly disappointing.
Okay, but I'm not even feeling that positive. So obviously, Lewis Hamilton fan here, I dread Q3. And I have to start asking really, like, what is going on? So we know that he favours a race setup. That's fine. I get that. So he doesn't mind slotting in behind his teammate, but he hasn't been slotting in behind his teammate. When it's gone wrong, it's really gone wrong. And so now I go into Q3, last couple of seasons, going, well, I hope Hamilton can, like, nick P6 or maybe a top five. If we're dreaming top five, there's not been a single Q3 where I've thought, oh, we might get on the front row, or oh, he's going to, you know, even get in the top three. And Russell has just been more on it in the build up to races.
So the thing that I want to talk about now, more than anything, is the bouncing.
Ooh, yeah.
At Mercedes, yeah. Because he was complaining about this. And this is going to bring me in 10 or 20 short minutes to the Williams hypothesis. Okay, maybe not 10 or 20 minutes, but hear me out. The thing with the bouncing is it causes the aerodynamic center of pressure to migrate unpredictably. And what Hamilton was complaining about was this rear instability. It's plagued them the last 3 years. It's the one thing they haven't solved. The car, he says, feels better, but at this track, and especially I think at these speeds, the faster you go, the more you're likely to have this problem. He's getting instability in the rear. Now, Russell spent a long time driving for Williams, who we know through Albon had a very unpredictable rear end and had to be driven in a specific way. I think that the current feeling of the car, it's unstable on entry, is something Russell has actually had more practice with. And so he's more comfortable with the car. I think mainly what we're seeing here is a confidence difference because Russell has had simply more practice with the car like this.
Didn't we have that at points of the last season when the car was performing, Hamilton looked better, and when it was not so much, then Russell was well. That's not completely uncommon. So we did see it with Ricciardo when he moved to Red Bull from Toro Rosso, and because he was used to a car that was not really responsive, he was doing better than Vettel, who just could not abide the car whose rear end was just not doing what he wanted.
I was going to bring up Weber and those tires. Remember when they had the squishy tires and it ruined the Red Bull blown diffuser? And suddenly Weber was just beating Vettel until Red Bull talked them into changing the tires back. It's the same thing.
Yeah, so there could be that, but it also could be, and I'm going to get email, matt@mistapex.net, emails.
Please, send me emails. I'm lonely.
I'm just, the more qualifying performances that go by where he's just nowhere near, you know, getting there, and we're relieved that he gets into Q3, the more you go, the peak could have come and gone when it comes to one lap pace. Not saying he's not smart, not saying he can't manage a race brilliantly and think his way through a Grand Prix, but maybe you don't get quicker forever in your one lap pace. Maybe that starts to go like most athletes, the peak is late 20s and Hamilton's late 30s. So I would like to see a qualifying performance. Could somebody just convince Hamilton to not set up for the race just one time? Because that's not working anyway. Someone convince Lewis Hamilton to set up for a one lapper just so that we can just see, yeah, go to Australia and go and stick it on the front row. I don't care if you disappear down the grid 2013 style. Yeah, just stick it on the front row. So that's, you know, in the fan space, I'm sad.
Yeah, fair enough.
I want to be proved wrong. That's the thing.
Well, I also have to wonder if a couple of years ago, back during the first year of this era of regulations, we knew that Hamilton was being a lot more experimental with the setups. Yeah. And he was trying a lot wider variety of things. So do we give him the benefit of the doubt maybe that that's what he's doing again now? Completely new car, completely new concept. And he's using these first couple of rounds at least to just try things and be more experimental than maybe Russell is.
Are you telling me not to panic in the first couple of races? What you're describing did happen in 2022, though.
Yes.
He took it upon himself to do a lot of testing. They ran him heavy with extra test equipment at the beginning, but there's no indication that that's what's happening this time. So they haven't like said, oh, Lewis is trying new things to help us solve our problems.
Be DeLulu. Sometimes it's the Salulu.
Wow. Stick that on a t-shirt, Matt.
Well, one of the things that I did today was I sort of trawled through the radio messages, and there was one to Lewis from his engineers. Basically, he was like, where are we losing time in the race? to Aston and to the McLaren. And they're basically like turn four through turn 10. But you're basically, you're flat with Russell. You and Russell are going the same pace in this race. But our car itself cannot keep up in this one section. And that's where all the time loss is. Because he was complaining about being slow. And they're like, yeah, we know. We're looking at the GPS. It's telling us the same story here. Again, they're trying to fix this problem by stacking more downforce on the rear, by putting a bigger wing on, but it's draggier. It's draggier than the kinds of downforce the other cars have. So it puts them at a real disadvantage on these very high speed circuits. I'm not saying they're not going to be able to fix it by the end of the season. If anyone can, Mercedes can, optimizing. That's what they do as engineers. But right now, the problem they have is they have to solve this and they haven't yet. And it's putting them at a disadvantage, especially at tracks like this.
Okay, but one of our fine patrons who supports us at patreon.com/ Mr. Apex, Matteo, is saying it's depressing to see Lando getting away from Hamilton in those high-speed corners at the end of the race. Well, not depressing if you're a McLaren or Lando Norris fan. But what's weird, Matt, is seeing Mercedes being so schooled on downforce. Because I know they had the engine advantage, but it was always downforce points, massive amounts of downforce points. Yeah, they were able to power through them before, maybe, and they can't do that now. But it was just so odd that they were the Williams-style rocket ship on the straights, and it was the McLarens that were dancing through the snakes.
Yeah, but again, that's just down to sort of McLaren having a better overall package, and Mercedes trying to slap a Band-Aid on this problem, where it's really going to cost them a lot of lap time. Over the course of a season, it's too soon to know where this is going to wind up. But the concern for me is that they never saw porpoising, they never saw bouncing as a problem with their tools. They changed their whole design, they got a new rear end, but the bouncing is still there. They weren't the only teams that had it. Red Bull was complaining about it in the first practices, but you notice they weren't complaining about it in the race.
Yeah, dulled
it out. So I still worry that maybe they don't have a handle on exactly why this is happening to them.
Okay, some positives then before we leave McLaren. You have to say, well, George Russell pretty much delivered and maximized in qualifying. And then he had the advantage of the plan A. So that was the plan A, wasn't it? Was to go softs, hard. What they start on? Mediums?
Medium hard.
Yeah, medium hard, a little bit early, but then... What I noticed, Matt, was a lot of the drivers were really over-managing. And then I think there came a point in the race where they went, oh, these hards, this is like Sochi 2012 or whatever. These hards aren't going off. We can just push. So Russell was like maintaining 34 and a half second laps. And at one point I went, oh, he's really struggling to keep up with Hamilton. Hamilton's got him on race pace. But as soon as Russell needed to, him and Alonso sort of were in the 32s. And they were going for it. So you have to say massively solid performance by Russell simply on executing the basics, qualifying, race pace. So that's good. And if you wanted to praise Hamilton, which I do, then also the defense against Piastri was wonderful to watch.
Yeah, well, that was like some of the most exciting scenes of the race. Piastri trying to get by him. And really, the Aston and the McLaren were similar. So Russell might have had more pace in the car, but he was stuck at Alonso's pace because Alonso was fast in that turn four through turn 10, and there was nothing he could do about it.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching the Piastri battle just because it was clear that there was a difference in the driver's skill at that point. Sorry, Piastri fans, but Hamilton, that was a much better defense than Piastri's attack. And Piastri was basically doing the same thing lap after lap, except with less of a tire advantage. And then it just, you know, and the one great chance he had, he stuffed it on the brakes and went off into turn one. Yeah.
And Lewis only had to hit him once to keep him behind.
Now, that's a funny one, because years ago, I'd have looked at that. Like, he did that to Rosberg a couple of times. He did it in the Canadian Grand Prix, I think, in 2015. And he go, that's rude. And I don't like that. But that's completely mandated by the rules at the moment. So because Piastri wasn't alongside him, apparently he can just drive him off the road and no one bats an eyelid. Like if that had happened 5 years ago, 3-4 years ago, people would be going, why didn't Hamilton get a penalty? But now no one bats an eyelid because we're so used to that.
Well, I don't know. Why did he not get a penalty?
Because you're allowed, because it is sanctioned in the rules, because he had the apex and Piastri basically had no business being there. Therefore, Hamilton could just claim the outside and push him off. But yeah, so yeah, definitely, you know, a big positive for Hamilton optically, but actually tactically, he gained absolutely zero from holding Piastri off. He was on completely the different tactics, and it was never going to benefit him to hold Piastri up.
Very true.
But was it not going to help Russell?
I don't know. I don't know. I was trying to do that maths. I was trying to do that maths. Yeah. I'm not sure. With 10 seconds. So it might have held the Piastri charge off. But look, what's the general running order then, Christina? How do you rate the top three or four now that we've seen a couple of races?
Ooh, like top three, four drivers?
No, cars. I think I like seeing the potential of the cars. Yeah.
Well, we know the Red Bull is the number one car.
Well done. Solid start to this rankings. Like,
I can count to one, y'all. Good for me. Next up, the Ferrari car. We can just put that there. And then aside that, it doesn't really feel like we have a front, mid, and back of the grid. It really does feel this year like we have a front of the grid and then a back of the grid. And that feels very strange.
I appreciate the fact
that the back of the grid is fighting amongst themselves. I appreciate that they are all seemingly on the same pace-ish, at least, or competitive with each other. I appreciate that. But for the front, next three cars are pretty obvious. I feel like the McLaren, Aston, and Mercedes, they're just going to swap positions of which one's better depending on which track they suit better.
Yep.
It's, on average, they're incredibly close. And who's going to come out on top is going to depend on A, strategy, and B, the number of well-suited tracks that we end up at. How many of them thought ahead and prioritized, you know, getting the most out of straight line speed versus high speed corners? Just do they do that? Do they calculate X number of turns, X number of straights? What do we optimize for? They must.
Yeah.
And then you make the calculated decision. Whoever made the most calculated decision for how to optimize their car is probably going to come out on top out of those three.
So, but operationally, you just go, right, okay, Mercedes doing poorly and McLaren doing really well are about even. That's how I'm looking at it at the moment. And that's what's happening. Like, Mercedes are leaving so much on the table. McLaren are just doing fantastically. And they are, well, I'd say McLaren actually have the edge at the moment. And Ferrari are clear. So Ferrari are clear in that second place at the moment. But Aston Martin made a little stake to that claim today as well. Like, Fernando Alonso finished up in P4. Again, solid. P4, P5? P5. P5. But this is a track with the low wear, I think, that is going to suit Mercedes and Aston Martin more compared to Mercedes, for sure. What's the Australian Grand Prix for wear? That's a one-stopper as well, isn't it? I think it's a one-stopper.
I think it is, but it may not be as kind to the tyres that you one-stop.
Oh, I see. So they might have you sort of clinging on for a bit. But here's a bit of a stat for you. Right, we're talking, Christina, you said there's a front of the grid and then there's a back of the grid. There's no midfield. You are absolutely correct, right? So Red Bull, unsurprisingly, up there with 87. Then Ferrari, 49. McLaren ahead, actually 28. Mercedes only on 26. Aston Martin in there with 13 points. So that's your top five. Guess how many points P6 has got?
Two.
One.
One?
So, yeah.
One.
So Haas, with that point today, has just risen up to P6 in the championship. And you've got Williams, Sauber, Visa Cash App, and Alpine all on 0 points. Like, you have absolutely nailed that the pack is split in half. That's crazy. I thought the cost cap was meant to stop that kind of thing, Matt.
Well, I think it has, though, because it's also meant to just bring the whole field spread closer. And it is getting closer. I mean, you had, granted, Magnussen had a lot to do with it, but you had that whole pack behind Magnussen just fighting with each other, and at least with the DRS at this track, able to keep up and really have a proper fight with each other, which I'm glad they did, because it made the race a lot more exciting to watch. But again, the issue here is Ferrari have put it together. They're behind Red Bull, but they put it together.
Yeah, they have, yeah.
Red Bull has put it together, and they've had it together for a while, so that's not a surprise. And then both Mercedes and McLaren, neither one of them quite got it together for the start of the season. Aston, I think, got very lucky at this race. They were fast exactly where they needed to be. I don't think they had as much race pace as Mercedes did.
No, I think Alonso knew that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're agreeing. But he had the pace in the right place to keep the Mercedes from being able to pass him. And that if Mercedes solves that problem, I think you're going to see Aston in the same kind of bubble they were in last year. Sort of like slower than everybody else, but faster than the rest of the midfield.
I really want to know how good Alonso is. I really want him up against that. Just any kind of, who was he up against? He was against Ocon. He looked in race pace, Matt. He did look pretty good. If you want to rate Ocon highly, then he looked good against Ocon. But at the moment, we're seeing him up against Stroll, and we've really got no idea. I would love to see two drivers in that, like stick Gasly in there with him and just see what's there. Because my instinct is that he's wringing the neck of that Aston Martin and that he's pulling miracles off every, you know, week in, week out. That's my instinct.
But that's the Alonso propaganda machine.
Oh, I've fallen for it, haven't I? I've fallen for it. With him going, I'm wringing it. I'm bursting with sweat. My arms are falling off, but I'm doing it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong. He is a great driver, and he's oftentimes by far the most entertaining thing on track, especially when he gets irritable on the radio. So I'm not, and you know, his beef with Ocon aside, the two of them, he's won championships. He's a great driver. He's clearly much faster than Stroll. The interesting thing is, if you got someone of that quality level in the Aston, where would they be in relationship? This is the same the Verstappen-Perez thing. This year, Perez is a lot closer. Last year, he wasn't. So, I don't know. But overall, I'm not as convinced by the Aston as a car as I am by the McLaren and the Mercedes. Well, and I'll stick with that.
Okay. I think they got lucky with the tire wear, and that probably suited them as well. And it might be track specific, but it was genuine this weekend. They were up there. They were up there in, you know, through FP2. And I was a little bit cynical because, you know, the Armco sponsor is associated with the track, and especially with certain rumours coming out that at this track, maybe Alonso got some favourable treatment. So when they popped up in FP2, I thought that was a bit of a glory run for their sponsor. But you can't deny that, you know, they had top running pace. You know, they were likely the third fastest. Well, they were the third best performing. Where did Piastri finish? Fourth?
Piastri finished fourth.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You can't deny to me, considering how low my expectations were for Aston Martin after round one, that's a good result. So they got something to build on.
Yeah, they had a low bar coming into it based on the last half of the 23 season.
All right. Well, that brings us towards the back straight of our Saudi Arabia Grand Prix race review. And unlike F1 Academy, we are going to stop when the checkered flag drops. A little bit of an unfortunate incident in the F1 Academy, Christina.
Definitely unfortunate. It's especially when you consider that there's so many procedures in place to make sure that you can't avoid seeing the red flag. But you know what? I was just happy to see those ladies on track. It brought me joy. It made me smile. I cried a little.
Was this the season opener?
Yes, it was. Okay. And then they're in Miami next.
Was it two races per round?
Two races per round, yes.
Okay. Oh, well, they're in Miami.
In Miami next, yes.
So they're as part of the support series. So I don't know if we're going to mention this. I'll mention this as a teaser because the plans have come together very recently. But I think there's a chance the three of us could be watching that F1 Academy together in person, because we are planning to get out to Miami. I have a work reason to be out in that part of the world at that time. And so I'm combining that with going to the Miami Grand Prix. And we are hoping to do some Missed Apex events around it. One thing I would like to do is have Missed Apex listeners join me at the conference center that I'm lining up and watch a classic Grand Prix. And then we'll assign blame. To I'll pick one that I can't remember. Because, you know, which is easy because I'm getting old now. My memory's fading. And then we'll do some content around that. So maybe like a short classic race review. And, we'll have a beer or a whiskey. What's the traditional drink of Miami? Tequila?
Probably some giant neon-colored thing with umbrellas.
Brilliant. Excellent. So what I would like is just a bit of feedback. If you're going to Miami and you think you might be interested in after first practice, second practice meetup, maybe you could just email me and just with the subject line Miami and maybe something like that. So go spanners@missedapex.net. And I'm just trying to gather to see how much interest there is in us doing some kind of event. during the races. And we'll do things like sprint reviews, and we'll do a race review while we're out there as well. What brought me onto this? Oh, yes. So it was Dorian Pin. That's not how you pronounce her name. It's French, isn't it?
Pan.
But it's Pin, isn't it? Dorian Pin. She missed the checkered flag and went round and did another lap. So she won, missed the checkered flag. Her whole team was celebrating. And then she went round, took the checkered flag again, and they had to throw red flags. So she has been deducted 20 seconds and has given up that win. But back to the Formula One. This is the part of the show where we give out our awards. So the first award, now I'm going to do it the right way around. We're going to do the negative one first so we can end on a high.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
All right. So we'll go to you. Christina Lee Mace. You're on TikTok mainly. We'll have a link to your TikToks. You're on Twitter, underfollowed criminally on Twitter. A pathetic 1,000 followers on Twitter.
1.1. Oh, thank you very much.
There we go. Sorry. Go and follow Christina there and Instagram.
Yeah. I do stuff there.
It's only going to be cat pictures, so don't bother with that. So go and follow Christina by clicking all the stuff below. Who missed the apex for you?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Who missed the apex? I would have to give it. I'm going to give it to Ricardo. He should be better than he is. Him struggling towards the back of the grid and not catching up to that pack is not a good look.
Yeah.
He should have been able to catch up to them.
Didn't know about the bad luck of the pit lane, but it didn't look good after that. So let's wait out and see if there's some reason. But the stakes couldn't be higher, could they? That's the problem. Because I'm looking at that Red Bull situation and, you know, we'll talk about it maybe later in the week. There might be a seat available really, really, really soon. You never know. You just don't know. So we have Ricardo for you, Matt Two Rumpets at MattPT55 on Twitter. You can follow him on Facebook, but it is literally all he posts is pictures of trumpets. So if you want to see pictures of trumpets, then go and follow him, Matt Trumpets. It is Matt Trumpets, isn't it? Because I set that account up for you.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Who missed the apex for you? Oh, big announcement coming up, but not now. On midweek.
Not now.
Personal
look for some interesting news for me later in the week.
And that's why you should follow us on Twitter, because you get personal announcements. Like me and Simon Dan have recorded our pilot episode of Final Written Warning, where we share your misadventures at work. And I asked for people to share stories with me, and some of you DM'd me crimes. So I'm not sure if you should do that, but we read them out anyway. Anyway, sorry, Matt, who missed the apex for you?
Well, to me, there can only be one winner this weekend. And that has to be Lance Stroll's race engineer going, can you bring it home after he stuffed it into the wall?
That was so funny. Yeah, because Lance Stroll does his talking in the wall. Yeah, I hit the wall. Can you bring it home? No, I'm in the blimmin' wall, he said. Yeah, but that's unfortunate because they don't know. They don't know that he's actually stuck it in the wall. I think the first thing he said was, I'm okay. So it's not like it was a really callous race engineer going, okay, but how about the car?
It was just so funny though, wasn't it?
Yeah. You always feel like, in honesty, the engineers probably assume most of the time the driver's going to be okay. So they're like, how long is it before I can ask if the car's okay? How long is it? Okay, who missed the apex for me? I can't believe I've been left this one, but Alpine as well. So, you know, not only... Should we just do a permanent one? Like they get a guest slot in it every... But then when they didn't even get Gasly, they got barely off the grid and then pulled in, you go, do you know what? Just bring Ocon in as well. Yeah. But actually, where did Ocon finish? Like 14th?
13th.
14th. Yeah. But he's there scrapping with Visa Cash App and Haas. That's not where they want to be, Matt. Not where they want to be at all.
No. Well, I mean, overweight, underpowered is never a great combination on a high-speed course. And
Stop looking at me.
There you go.
Fair enough. Okay, brilliant. And now that means we get to end on a positive. It's the thing of the weekend. Super duper. Lots of positive things, I think. But let's start with you again, Christina. Who got your thing of the weekend?
There's only one right answer to this. And if any of you guys say anything other than Ollie Bearman,
we can't all say it.
I will fly over to your homes and meet you for the first time in nothing but rage and anger.
Right.
Because it's Ollie Bearman. It was his day. Nothing else mattered. He and his dad were so happy. Whatever. Nothing else matters. Just Ollie Bearman.
I think it was all made a bit much of. I think it was over the top. I think it was over the top. They gave
Sometimes it, that's okay. Sometimes you just have to give in to the good feeling spanners.
Right. I had the good feeling. For me, it's as local as you can get. You know, Iceni Warrior up in Chelmsford. Doesn't really sound like an Essex lad, to be fair. But he's got that international accent that a lot of drivers have got. But I feel like the screaming commentary as he crossed the line in seventh, I just don't feel like that was warranted. He was given a babysitting job, yeah, and a ease you in job, and he did it adequately and learned loads of things but along the way and tried really hard. But you can't say like he blew open the world of F1. He just did well and with the limited targets he was set. And I feel like I'm the only person who is saying this. Like no one else is being anything but this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. But I'm like, it was pretty good.
It was impressive in a lot of ways.
Christina looks like she's going to kill me.
I would have for anyone watching this and being as excited. I mean, look, I was very excited to see Bearman. It was
me too.
Great story. He did really well. Lots of people would have done much, much worse than
Definitely.
Him, especially with the notice and the lack of practice. That said, the circuit itself is a low degradation circuit.
Yeah.
So the issue for all the rookies generally is, looking after them tires on the abrasive track. Yeah. So we've not seen him in that. We saw Nyck de Vries show up and do a really great job and get a drive and then absolutely stuff it when he had to be a full-time race driver. So that would be my cautionary aspect to Bearman.
But also, when Lawson came in, similarly, no experience, he wasn't given a, hey, don't just stick it in the wall brief. He was like, get at it. And he got at it.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, Bearman didn't have that same opportunity to do it because they definitely gave him a don't smash up Carlos Sainz's car brief.
Yeah. Yeah. They did. And Lawson, another one who did well. So we have some exciting rookies waiting in the wings, but you have to test them over more than just a single day and a single car to really know what they're made of.
Oh,
that would be the only other side of the, it was Ollie Bearman's day. I have a different thing of the week.
No, hang on. I didn't have the Slack chat open. And I was like, because Christina was like giving me daggers. I went, how much abuse am I getting in the live chat? Ben says, spanners hate joy. And that's the first, that's the first thing I've seen. And Wes says spanners doesn't like bears. That's true. Bears are dangerous. So I understand. I'm just giving a bit of balance to the unbridled, you know, thing. I would love to see him given a chance and like with the brief, go get him, knock him out, kid. But he did everything I think that was asked of him. It would have been silly for him to exceed that brief. Matt, thing of the weekend.
Thing of the weekend has to be Lando Norris' start.
Well, I mean, he rescued it, didn't he? He saved it. Good save, I reckon that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We have yet again the inevitable controversy of somehow this car was moving and yet it didn't jump the start. And I love this every time it happens.
But I think the precedent is fine, isn't it? Like we've had it with Vettel and Bottas. As long as you don't go out of the box, you can take a second jab.
Yeah, well, he was out of the... I mean, he was over that line.
It did look like he was over the line to me. Yeah. But then... But isn't it more to do with the sensor? It's more to do with the sensor. So if he's still within a sensor range, you know, I've got no problem with that not being a penalty.
It's the sensor, 100%. If it doesn't trip the sensor and you've lined up in the box properly, it's not a jump start. Although there are those who would argue that somehow his penalty got sent to Magnussen by mistake.
Fair enough. And so I'm left with a thing of the weekend. We've got a bit of Danny Ric defenses going on in the live chat as well. Joe Crawford says, oh, wow, Tsunoda got 5-second penalty after the race, was 15th, not 14th. So he lost 6 places today and the slowest fast lap, but Danny's getting all the heat. Well, okay, well, you know, it's never a strong sign when to defend your driver, you have to talk about how badly another driver also did. That's not always the strongest footing to go on. And I don't know why I read out your full surname. Sorry, just didn't recognize it. First names only, no more surnames ever on the stream. And then you can be guaranteed that if you join them in the Missed Apex chat, which I think you should, and get our extra worse content and an ad-free feed, I think you should do it. patreon.com/MissedApex. I am going to give my thing of the weekend to McLaren in general, because I don't think they've come out with the best car, the car that their fans hoped they would have, but they're getting everything else right. they're getting it right. They do have a good car. They do have a good platform. They have a high downforce car that can go through high speed sections like race cars are meant to, and they can go racing. And Piastri looked great today as well. And whenever they get these low wear tracks, they're going to cash in because they're a good team with good drivers. And I think when they get these opportunities, they're not going to fluff them. So I think that McLaren's one of the teams I've been most impressed with. Do we have any other things of the weekends or missed apexes?
I mean, I guess Leclerc got a podium. Yay for him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Leclerc didn't look that sad today. That's got to be a thing of the weekend as well.
Yeah. Sargent stayed behind Albon for a huge chunk of time. That's not bad. Yeah.
And as like, we know, we praise Sargent if he's close to Albon, don't we? So that's okay, good. Well, well done, Albon, as well. If you've got any feedback for us, always feel free to get in touch. feedback@missedapex.net. Look in the show notes below. Follow us on all the things. Look out for some midweek content. We will respond to any breaking news that might come out on Monday evening or Tuesday morning. But until we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.